Welcome to the Professional Troublemaker Podcast. This is a place where we help you cultivate the courage, authenticity, and audacity you need to use your voice, take up space, and live a life that is so bold, even your wildest dreams say goals. I'm your host, Lavi Ajayi Jones, New York Times bestselling author, sought-after speaker, and side-eye sorceress, bringing you thought-provoking conversations with amazing people who have taken action, done scary things, and rocked the boats to an audacious life. Like the late, great John Lewis said, these are the kind of people who are never, ever afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble. This month, I'm pulling from the archives of the podcast from back when it was called Rants and Randomness, and I'm resharing some interviews with guests who are truly professional troublemakers. We are calling this Archive April. And first, I'm sharing my conversation with my bestie, my boo, Badass Bose, also known as Bozema St. John. At the time of this interview in 2018, Bose had just started in her new role as the Chief Marketing Officer of Endeavor. Since that interview, Bose has continued being the absolute badass that she is, taking on a new role as Global Chief Marketing Officer for Netflix, teaching a course at Harvard Business School, and also launching an online workshop called The Badass Workshop, providing tools and lessons for women to architect their best lives. Oh, and we also launched a global social movement together last summer with Glennon Doyle called Share the Mic Now that has gotten billions of impressions across the globe, has gotten so many offshoots, and it's been amazing. Being a professional troublemaker means choosing to show up as your whole self, unapologetically, no matter what room you're in. And no one does that better than Bose. So enjoy listening to this conversation with the boss of badassery herself, Bozema St. John. All right, so my next guest is super special to me because she's a member of my Glow Up Squad, founding member of the West African Voltron, and one of those friends who has become family. She's also one of my FOMO enablers, okay, with all her shenanigans. And I am so excited to have her, Bozema St. John, a.k.a. Boz. What up, girl?
Yes, hi, love you.
Woo! Hey, boo. Let me give people your official bio so they understand. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you walk in here strutting. Bozema St. John began her career in advertising, working for industry titans, including Arnold Worldwide, before making her way to PepsiCo, where she led the company's entertainment marketing efforts. During her tenure at PepsiCo, she managed brand integrations with media juggernauts. And you know that whole, like, Beyonce Super Bowl thing? Yeah, she was a woman behind that. You know what I mean? Epic, okay? And after nearly a decade at PepsiCo, she was at Beats Music and then went to Apple Music. And then she joined Uber as Chief Brand Officer in 2017. And recently, she joined Endeavor as its Chief Marketing Officer and will oversee marketing efforts across the company's portfolio. This chick is over here. Then I picked her as, like, best dressed in Silicon Valley, Ad Age's 50 most creative people. Y'all, her resume is ridiculous. Just stupid. So, hey, boo.
Exactly. Tell him. Yeah, a little louder for those.
Y'all team scatter them. Y'all scatter in them left and right.
That's correct. Pepe them gang.
Yes. Okay, so I'm wondering, like, what did you want to do when you were growing up?
Ooh, right. So because, you know, West African, my parents wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, engineer. I feel like most people, you know, feel that way. So I picked the one that was, like, closest. I was like, okay, I'll be a doctor then. I don't know. That sounds pretty good.
Same.
And I happened to be good in sciences and math, although I'm not sure if I'm naturally gifted in science and math or if it was just because, like, my dad would, like, you know, lock me in my room and tell me to, like, you know, study the encyclopedia every day. You know what I mean? It's like, not quite sure. It's like nurture or nature. But for whatever reason, I did really well in sciences and math. And so it felt like, you know, medicine might be my calling. So that's what I decided. I mean, I took it all the way through. I was committed. I went to college as pre-med. I applied to med schools, got in, like, the whole
what?
Thing. I went far. I went really far with this ruse, this lie.
Yo, like, I feel like I actually had a question here that was like, did you get the pressure to be doctor, lawyer, engineer? And you already said it because
oh,
that
yeah.
is the universal African story. You know, I was also going to be a doctor.
And were then, you really? I'm girl, looking yeah. at that. We're such look a disappointment.
We are just appointments. See, I dropped my rules way earlier than you did. Like my freshman year of college, I got the D in chemistry and I was like, you know what? We done here.
Oh, wow.
I ain't going to be. Yeah, no. Nah.
So I didn't. Yeah, no.
So you actually applied to med schools.
Yes, yes. I mean, I did the whole thing. I was at Orgo Chem. Like I did all of it. I applied to med schools. Yeah. With the MCAT. Like I really went. I really tried.
You tried.
But you know what happened is that in college, I was also that, I mean, maybe not a surprise to anyone now, but that chick that threw all the parties, you know? So I was the one, and I lived my first year, actually my first and second years in college, I lived in a house called the Malcolm X House,
okay.
which was on Wesleyan University's campus. And my upbringing had been in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Where, you know, it wasn't very diverse and there were no real, you know, not a lot of Black people running around. So by the time I got to college, I was like, oh, Malcolm X house, that sounds like the place I need to be. Well, right. Yeah, it was the place to be. And it was also the place where I threw a lot of parties in the basement. I mean, I did a whole lot of stuff. So coming into that space and knowing that, you know, I was definitely excited by the things that were more social and what I would call like more pop culture, you know, I would organize like concerts. By the way, I brought Jay-Z to the campus, to the cafeteria. Yes. during my junior year, it was a disaster. But in any case, it was just one of those things that, you know, all of the things that I was spending a lot of my emotional time with were what, you know, really where my heart was, right? The things that I was doing in the classroom or in my study time just felt so like it was such a burden. And I really wanted a break between college and, you know, starting med school because I just knew I needed like double down on, mm-hmm. you know, just concentrating. And so that's what I told my parents that I needed a year to explore New York and like, you know, get some other work under my belt before I went to med school. And unfortunately for them, they agreed.
And you never left.
Girl, I never left. Okay, 15 years later, I was like, ha ha, I tricked ya.
You know? Bro, like, were your parents ever the ones who were like, do or die, like sink or swim? Were you actually feeling the pressure of, I cannot disappoint them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I felt that a lot. And hell, I think if I could admit it, I still feel today. You know, the need to, you know, make them proud. You know, that everything that they've done, everything that I do is a reflection of them, you yeah. know? And so I still feel that pressure all the time. I mean, yeah, it has never left, really.
It's funny, when you win awards and your mom is there, hey, shout out to Mama Abba, my Ghanaian mama.
Yeah.
You be like, she's just there to basically look amazing. And you could tell yeah. she's proud, but African parents, their level of proud is different.
Oh, my goodness. They're the most boasting, exaggerating people on the planet. Okay. They're, you know, it's like, and the funny thing is I'm like, Mom, but Ward is amazing already. Like you don't have to add to it. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't need any extra encomium, as they would say, you know,
but, my daughter is the president of a company.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, the year I gave the, Apple keynote,
yeah,
which was, you know, a big deal because, you know, it's like no Black woman had ever been on the stage and, you know, there was all these other things happening. And so there were lots of articles written and I talked to my dad that night, who was very surprised, by the way, because up until that point, he still thought I was a complete failure, you know? And so he was so shocked. He was like, so you're good at this thing, eh? And I was like, Daddy, are you serious? I'm actually pretty successful. Thank you very much. But, and by the way, it'll keep you humble. You know what I mean?
So
because
humble.
After that day, like you can imagine, like I got so many, you know, texts and messages, people telling you the greatest ever. And then you talk to your dad and he's like, so this tin, it's a working out, eh? You know what I mean? Like it just keeps you grounded. But in any case, I after that day, you know, I got a call from a distant family member who was like, I was talking to your father and he said that you are now the CEO of Apple. And I was like, yo, no, that job belongs to Tim Cook. Okay. I am not the CEO of Apple. But it was just hysterical because I'm like, you know, this was a big win. It was great, you know, for me and my career and, you know, it was great in and of itself. But then he went and just added to it.
Added extra.
For no reason.
They have to add the extra. You know what's funny is like they never tell us personally that they're proud of us. They tell other people. Oh. We find out from other people.
No, we find out accidentally, you know, that they're proud. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, they are proud, you know, because this is what they have worked for. Right. Yeah. And by the way, it's like this, it is interesting, ironic thing where it's like you can, you know, as long as you're achieving something, they're probably going to boast about you. They're just not telling you.
They're just not telling you.
You know what I mean? It's like any achievement, you know, it's like it's even happening with my daughter now. Right. Where it's like, you know, she's just finishing third grade and, you know, they have like their school awards or whatnot. And she, you know, even though I travel a lot and sometimes I do travel with her, she really hasn't missed a day of school this year. So she got the award for like perfect attendance or whatnot.
Oh, right? Well.
Yeah. She's, I mean, adorable. So of course, you know, my mother tells the world that, you know, because she hadn't missed a day of school, she's now, you know, the teacher assistant in the classroom. And I'm like, that's not true. That's not true. That's actually a lie. You know, she's not assisting anybody. Okay.
Lord.
But it's hysterical because it's like even the small achievements are, you know, a big deal and they would love to boast about that.
You know, it's funny, like Africans, we humble each other. So the Voltron squad, we are just a bunch of useless people.
Yes.
Like, the way we even compliment each other is ridiculous. Like we talk about how our parents are ridiculous about how they do. We'll be like, ah, so y'all not just useless all the time. Hey, right. Congrats.
Exactly. And congratulations on your lack of uselessness. And it's like, wait, is that a compliment?
Is that
like,
a compliment?
I don't understand.
And you're like, thank you.
Does that feel better?
So, like, first of all, my mom calls you badass, just so you know. And as you go through the world as badass bows.
Oh my God. First of all, I'm sorry, I gotta interrupt you because the fact that your mom calls me badass, I don't know if I should also be proud or embarrassed. I don't know. It's a combination of like pride and shame.
She's like, how is badass? Seriously, mom, her name is not
badass. Oh my God, I love it.
You made my mom curse. Congrats.
Oh man, I know, right? That's what I'm saying. I don't know if I should be proud of that or like ashamed, you know? Oh man.
I think both.
Okay, well, I'll take it.
I'll take it. So like you walk into this world as badass bows. You're like getting on planes wearing Kente dresses in Silicon Valley. You walking in these meetings with big hair, red lipstick, just like fully yourself. And it's not been easy. Like what gives you the courage to be able to show up as yourself every day?
Oh, girl. Right. I mean, that's a really big question, you know, because we have been, and I especially think for Black women, you know, let's just start there, where, you know, we have been so, the indoctrination of our image, you know, as not good enough has like permeated, it's like, it's in our mind, you know, it's in our psyche. It shows up in how we behave and how we excel because we're just constantly told that being ourselves is not good enough. And so you take that in subconsciously, even, you know, it's like your hair is not good enough. Your butt's too big. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like your voice is too loud. Your expressions are too wild. You know, your passion is too strong. Like everything is just too much.
Right.
And so what happens is that we start to quiet all those, like anything else, a suppression of your greatness means that you really can't be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you suppress all of those amazing, beautiful things about ourselves. And like, how do we expect to excel? We're spending so much time in the energy of not being ourselves that how do you expect like your best ideas or your best comments or, you know, your best effort to be present? It can't be. It's impossible. It's like physically not possible. Chemically not possible. And so I recognized that pretty early, you know, that I just wasn't able to really bring the best of myself unless I was bringing my whole self, because that's really what the best is.
Yeah.
And I would be in these meetings and couldn't comment on anything happening or give my opinion on any of the ideas in the room because I was busy trying to formulate how I was going to say it, but I didn't want to say it the way I would say it. I wanted to say it the way that the guy next to me was going to say it. How in the hell am I supposed to be psychic on that?
Yeah.
So what would happen literally is that I would say nothing in the whole meeting. I would spend the whole time thinking about, well, how do I exactly say this so it sounds more like him and less like me? You know? And then you miss out on the whole opportunity. So I would walk out of meetings and I would often get reviews that said like, oh, you don't contribute, you know, we don't, you don't have great ideas. But meanwhile, wow. I know I got the best ideas. Okay. Yeah. But I wasn't able to communicate them. And so after a few of those types of conversations, I just, you know, I realized that I had to just say it, you know, in the moment. And it was scary, you know, it's like scary. I remember those, you know, first few years of trying to practice that. And by the way, nothing is overnight.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like I decided and then the next day I was like, awesome. You know,
right.
It's like it took a while. And for me, it was practice. And sometimes it's still practice. You know, when you're in rooms that seem so large with people who seem so impressive, you know, and knowing that like your ideas are as worthy as theirs,
yeah.
or your opinion is as worthy as theirs, and having to practice that and knowing that like, okay, I've got to open my mouth and say what I want to say. It doesn't matter how I think it's going to sound or how they're going to react. I've got to say it.
Right.
And you'll be surprised that more often than not, that idea really is the winner. And people will really look at you almost in surprise, which is a whole nother conversation. But
yeah.
Look up and say, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That idea. All right. Cool. That sounds amazing. You know, and that's how you get the best ideas across.
I think people are so used to seeing other people and seeing themselves wearing masks that you stand out in a way that's, besides the fact that you're like 5'10", you're chocolate,
Amen.
You be having like the bombest hair. People legit be shocked when you walk in a room, because I've been in rooms where people are like, oh, she dares to be this person. And it always shocks me because I'm always like, why are people stunned that she's this person or like I'm this person?
Right.
It's because we don't see it enough. Like, what do you tell the woman who's like, yo, like I have to wear a mask every day to succeed? What do you tell her?
Well, the thing that I really want to encourage, and this is the part about sort of bravery and sometimes being the only or the few, right? Which is that none of us can do it by ourselves.
Right.
You know, there are a few people who can do it and that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong if it's like, oh my God, I'm afraid I can't do it by myself. That's okay. You know, and, this is not a shaming conversation.
Yeah.
You know, but we do need help. And so most of the time I feel like if I am even virtually helping someone else show up,
yep.
And by the way, sometimes those are my favorite comments on Instagram or anywhere else where people are like, girl, you know, today I wore my 6-inch heel to the office. I'd be like, yes, like, yes, you get it. You strut up and down those hallways, you know, and I'm snatching air, you know, I'm so happy when I see that because I think it really does take the encouragement of each other to take down those masks, you know, and I wish that more of us would be able to do it more often. That way we can be unstoppable. You know, it's like it only looks weird if I'm the only one doing it.
Correct.
You know, if we're all
Correct.
Doing it,
yep.
like if we're all wearing our natural hair, if we're all, well, hell, by the way, no judgment on that either, because I do love myself a weave and a wig
a
and a
jerry
curl.
Bundles.
I got bundles under my sink right now. Okay. Like, there's no, but if we all show up in exactly the kind of way, this black girl magic that we possess, then it won't be so weird.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we'll shock them with our brilliance instead of shocking them with our strangeness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, I want to make sure that it's no longer strange. It's not an oddity.
Yeah.
That this magic is not a surprise. Like I'm not the only one who possesses it.
Amen.
You know, Lovey possesses it. Yvonne possesses it. You know, like we are able to show up because we have the capacity to, and it should be celebrated instead of stared at.
Correct.
So for me, I want to make sure that like, yes, I'm representing that, but that I'm also encouraging other sisters to do that too.
We got to normalize being our authentic selves. We got to normalize that.
Normalize being our authentic selves. That's an amazing, amazing way to put it.
Just be the people that we are. Now you've had some like high profile moves. You've made some super high profile moves. And last year,
I want to be seen, girl.
Yeah, girl, listen, you out here. So you went from Apple to Uber. And I know that was a tough decision because people look at Apple as like the grand place, right? The ivory tower. And at the time that you moved to Uber, it was in the middle of a lot of like public challenges. Like what made you decide to take on that role? And were you nervous that you were biting off more than you could chew, like in the face of this public scandal?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, that I think looking backwards, and I love the think pieces of how people think I've, you know, created a career.
Mm-hmm.
because it wasn't necessarily a strategic plan. You know, I didn't have a plan that said, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that. I'm walking in my own divine path.
Yeah.
You know, the one that was set for me. And so, again, I don't look at other people's careers and say, oh, well, I want to do that, because it's not meant for me. You know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And the way that I know I'm walking in the right path is that I really do listen to my spirit. You know, other people call your gut, your intuition, all of that. I go where I know I'm called. And so when I met Travis Kalanick last spring, I knew that that was the place I was supposed to go, regardless of what the logic told me. You know, this is why I've stopped creating pro and con lists. You know, when people are like, oh, should I make this move? Let's write all the pros down. Let's write all the cons down.
Yeah.
It's like, first of all, you're quieting your spirit when you do that. You're rationalizing something that is probably not meant for you. You know, what we should be doing is practicing listening to our intuition. So you sit down in a quiet room by yourself, concentrate, you know, listen to your spirit. What is it telling you? Don't be afraid, because when it's telling you go in this direction, and you know that, like, oh shit, like maybe that doesn't look too big, or it's too scary or whatnot. You know, it's like, I love the saying, like, the, you know, the will of God will never take you where the grace of God cannot keep you. You know, that is a real thing. It's like, so I go unafraid. If I feel it, and I felt it the day I met Travis, then I know that's where I'm supposed to go. You know, God is not going to take me into a place that I can't manage. And so I have that strong belief. And so for me, as I looked at the opportunity at Uber, it was also twofold. One, yes, my intuition, my spirit told me I should go there. But I knew that, you know, the conversation around diversity and sexual harassment and all these challenges was a really important one for us to tackle. You know, that, you know, people said, oh, burn the building down. But honestly, why do we want to do that? That just proves the fact that certain places we can't be in. No, I don't want to do that. I want to go into a place and say, okay, this is wrong, but we're going to not, like, we're going to take it over. You know, we're not going to burn it down. Like, I want to be in that place and change it so that there is no company, no industry, no space that we are not allowed to be in. So for me, it's like, it's really important that, again, we look at these brands and these companies and not burn them down. It's like, who's going to go in? And by the way, let's not just send one person. Let's send 100.
Right.
And let's go fix that shit.
Storm the castle.
You know? Yes. Storm the castle. Yes.
So, storm the castle.
Let's go right in and let's all go in and make sure that we're changing. And then the second part of it was for business reasons. You know, there are very few chief executives who are Black women.
Yeah.
And the fact that I could occupy that seat, especially in tech, was really important to me for both personally, for my career, you know, and making sure that I was getting to that next rung on the ladder, but also, again, as a signal, you know, that we are more than capable, highly qualified, and we should be given those seats. And by the way, also call out the fact that it's an embarrassment. Why am I the only C-suite executive in Silicon Valley? It doesn't make any sense.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And so for me, I'm like, let's change this conversation. You know, let's change the conversation. So yeah, so for a number of reasons, I felt like I, you know, felt it in my spirit, and I knew that I would be able to go there and have the grace to sustain all of the hits that would come.
So after a year, what makes you think your job is done? You've moved on to Endeavor and left Uber behind. What made you make that decision?
Well, the job isn't done. You know, let's be clear about that. It's definitely not done. Perhaps somebody else can follow behind me. You know, the door is open. So storm the castle. You know, somebody should go and continue the work. And by the way, there's so many talented tech women, you know, especially women of color. So my hope, and by the way, I've said this publicly, I said it to the CEO, that my hope is that we have Black women who are considered for that role after me, and that any criticism or, you know, notion that, you know, oh, well, one didn't make it, now we got another one, should not be listened to. You know, because at this point, we're here trying to get critical numbers up for these roles. And so why should it be replaced by white men?
Oh,
it shouldn't
come on.
Be.
It should not be.
And so we need, you know, we need the door open. So my hope is that the opportunity will be given to somebody else to try their hand at it. But for me, it just wasn't the right time, you know, that the needs of the business, the needs of operations, you know, there were lots of other things that were happening that needed to be fixed. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that wherever I am, I'm creating big impact. You know, I'm really proud of the work that I did in the time that I was there. You know, we worked with LeBron and had an amazing moment in Uber where he and Kevin Durant were talking about being, you know, what it means to be a Black man in America. Mm-hmm. And LeBron said some things that pissed off some journalists on Fox News or whatnot. And, mm-hmm. you know, she recalled the conversation saying he should just shut up and dribble, you know, which became its own cultural moment.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't sitting in the chief seat at Uber.
Yeah.
You know, that I funded that conversation and also gave the chance for Carrie Champion, who is a brilliant journalist at ESPN, but doesn't get nearly the credit she deserves or the spotlight. You know, I put her in the driver's seat, literally in the driver's seat in that commercial and in subsequent commercials to also have her moment. You know, it increased her profile even within ESPN to know that she's a personality and someone who can, you know, shine in a commercial. So for me, I'm really proud of some moments that I had there and able to really work with some incredible people. But I'm really excited about the future. You know, I don't think it's any, you know, any secret that Hollywood also needs some help.
Sure does.
You know, and if I'm a storyteller, which is what I consider myself, a chief storyteller, I want to be able to also influence the places where these narratives are being created.
Yeah.
So now that I'm Endeavor, which has, you know, some of the biggest talent in the world and some of the most influential companies, hopefully we'll be able to create some additional narratives in this marketing seat that will, again, extend our stories in much more impactful ways.
Know that this podcast is named after my second New York Times bestselling book, Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual, which is available now wherever you get your books. With this book and with everything that I do, I am on a mission to help a million people live audaciously. To do that, they must fight their fear. So think of it. A million people who are out there standing on the edge of something great and need that little push of encouragement. That push to be the domino, to say the hard thing, to have the hard conversation. A million people kicking their fears to the curb and stepping into the life that they've been dreaming of. A million people asking for a raise. A million people, you know, starting a fierce job that they're not sure they're ready for. You know, a million people doing something that feels so big that their wildest dreams say goals. My goodness. That is what writing this book has done for me. What it's already done for those who are reading it and gifting it to others. This book has empowered people to say yes to things that they were previously saying no to. It's empowered people to have tough conversations they weren't gonna have before. People have asked for raises and promotions and gotten them after reading this book and finding the courage to speak up. The domino effect of what has been happening when a few people have decided not to live in the realm of fear has been amazing. Think of what could happen if a million people stop letting fear be the first factor in their decision-making. An audacious mission like that can't happen without you. So let's get this book in the hands of as many people as possible. Buy a copy of Professional Troublemaker for yourself or as a gift for your friend who needs a push. I know it'll change your life like it's changed mine. And I know it will change lives of all these people who touch it because domino effects are real. Professional Troublemaker, which is available in hardcover or audiobook, I narrated it, and ebook, is now at professionaltroublemakerbook.com. Order it there or wherever you buy your books.
When you look at where you are now, like you've risen up the ladder, all that good stuff, and you celebrate your wins loudly, and it's because you remember the past struggles. Like when you reflect, at what point was the struggle almost too real where you were like, I don't even know if I'm gonna make it?
Oh, girl, there have been many of those moments. I mean, there are, because, you know, the real challenge also psychologically for me, and I think for a lot of Black women in corporate or in these businesses is that there isn't a great support structure, you know? So when you have a failure, there's no one for you to honestly and openly talk to.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to put on the brave face and say, oh yeah, you know what? I might've failed, but here was the learning. You know, you can't like openly cry, you know, or mope around for a couple of weeks, you know, for somebody else to pat you on the back and say, oh, it'll be all right. You know, because the moment you slip and admit that you may have made the wrong decision or maybe it didn't go as well as you thought, you're going to get the pile on of people who are like, see, I told you she wasn't smart enough. I told you she wasn't good enough. She shouldn't even be in that job. Hmm. You know? So psychologically for us, we don't have the freedom to be able to be honest about these failures that then could become learnings for us.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's been a struggle to find the right support network so that I can actually honestly and openly get feedback, which will make me better and stronger, et cetera. But yeah, I do feel that there are lots of moments where I ponder whether or not, you know, I'm cut out for it. And a lot of times where, you know, now I feel like it's a superpower of mine. And it alludes back to the point you made about me celebrating myself. I'm my biggest cheerleader, you know, my biggest advocate. There's no one in the world who can make me feel better than myself.
Yes.
Literally, you know, like, shoot, listen, I look at myself in the mirror and sometimes I'm like, girl, why are you so damn fine? Like, seriously. Yeah. You know, or like I come up with an amazing idea and I'm like, yo, like, ain't nobody smarter than me. Get out of here. Like, this is what, you know, but that's also practice.
Yeah.
You know, because we have the voices in our head that do tell us that, like, oh, girl, you need to lose those 5 pounds, or, you know, that idea is not really that cute. You know, don't say it out loud to anybody because you're going to make me fun of. You know, like, it takes practice to also practice that self-love and that self-celebration so that when the mistakes come or the failures come and you feel terrible and you feel like maybe you're not going to make it, that you're also the one who's encouraging yourself that you can get back out there, that you can try again tomorrow, that it wasn't devastating, you know, that you can learn from the issue. And that's really, really important for us to survive.
Do you still have imposter syndrome sometimes?
Not really.
Yes. Yes. I love that answer.
No. You know, part of it is that, and again, I feel like this is a habit that has been formed over time, which is that usually, and it applies to me too, that we look at an opportunity or a job or a room or a project, and we need to check off every box in preparation for that thing because, like, we don't want to fail at it. You know, so by the time you get in the room or by the time you get the job, you are so overqualified for it that it's almost easy. You know what I mean? Like, I can step into rooms now or into jobs and just like, well, of course I should have this job. Of course I should be in this room. I'm more prepared than any of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so imposter syndrome, I don't really suffer with because I do feel overprepared most times for most jobs and for most meetings, even in that.
Yes. See, most people will be like, yeah, I do. You're like, nah, I'm good.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm exactly. Good.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception people have about you or your work or just like the space you take up?
Ooh, well, you know, that's a multi-answer, I feel like. I think people see my work or see, you know, the results of my work and think it's really shiny and really glamorous and don't realize the hard work that it takes. You know, the sleepless nights, the real strategy, you know, the smarts that it requires. In order to attain and to sustain it, you know, that, you know, they tell you all that glitters isn't gold, you know, and it's true. It's like, it's not gold, it's fucking sweat.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's blood, it's tears. So my glitter is made up of all of that pain and sacrifice and hard work. You know, it's not gold. And so for me, I really try hard to, celebrate myself, celebrate my wins, like, you know, show the fabulosity of the lifestyle and the whole thing. But all of that is backed up, you know, it's like, it's not a mirage. Yeah. So when you poke at the dream, like there's substance back there.
Yep.
And I think that's a misconception. Some people have tried it, and I'll correct you in a second.
Because people see all the traveling, all the like, oh my God, not realizing you're missing like Lael's school play, or you're missing sleep because you have to go catch another flight.
Correct. Or the fact that like, yes, I may have gone to London, but I turned around that trip in 2 days, met with 16 people in the matter of 17 hours because I actually do have to get back to see her play. You know, so whereas other people are able to, and by the way, some of my colleagues are able to extend that into the weekend and like go out and have a great time. Like you don't see me in the club in London, you know, because all I've done is meet back to back to back to back and then got back on the plane and went home, you know? So again, it's like, there is, I think, some misconception about what it actually takes to maintain the lifestyle and to really have it all. It ain't easy, man.
So what do you want people to say about you? Well, actually, no. What do you think people say about you when you're not in the room?
That's an interesting question.
Because I think that's what a brand is, right? And you have a brand.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I think people say that I am magnetic, you know, and that my ideas are powered by my ability to put shine on it. You know, that is some sort of ethereal thing that they can't put a handle on. Like I often, it's funny. It's like, I know that's true because it comes back to me, you know, where people are like, well, you tell the idea or you sell it because only you could do that. By the way, I love that. I love that because it's my own brand, right? It's like, well, you can't do what I do.
Hey, because special sauce.
Exactly. It's my own special brand, you know, that somehow I have something magical, and I struggle with the word magic because it makes it sound non-human, you know, or not like smart luck. Or accidental. Yeah, I'm like, no, it's not accidental at all. But there is something to that because it does make me uniquely qualified then to do what I do.
Yeah.
You know, these last two jobs that I've had, actually, no, let me take that back. Three, Apple, Uber, and now Endeavor, no one has occupied this seat before me.
Wow. Yep.
These are all
each
jobs
one.
That each yeah. one, these are jobs that were created for me. Actually, no, let me take it back a step further. Pepsi, my last job at Pepsi, which was the head of music entertainment. No one had had that job before me either. So now, oh my God, I'm just realizing that right now. My last four high powered jobs, no one has had the job before me.
They literally created it for you. Holy shit. Yeah.
That requires magic. That requires people to believe that you have something special that no one else has. Therefore, create something new just for you, tailor-made to fit for you. So I encourage that perception.
You better come on anointing, okay?
Okay.
Come on, favor. That is favor. Yes. That is some special favor right there. See, this is what I'm saying. I feel like things happen in the way they're supposed to happen, in the way they're ordered.
Yes. That's right.
That's it.
The way they're ordered. Yes.
I did not realize your last four jobs. Holy smokes. Wow.
Yeah.
They actually have created each position. Yeah. That's incredible. That's incredible. And
amen.
I love the fact that I have you in my squad because being able to go up ladders and have these careers and be visible, it's good to have somebody to be able to like compare notes with. Which is why I love Voltron so much, because we're like in the perfect alignment of each other's lives because we happen to support each other and like lift each other up. It's like, what's the point of being at the top if you can't have a party with your friends?
Correct. Yes. What's the point? Ain't no fun if the homies can't have none.
If the homies can't have none, okay.
I think they were talking about something else.
I know.
But for us, we're reinterpreting it for ourselves.
We are. We absolutely are. And a lot of times we get messages from people who are like, yo, like, y'all are encouraging me to be exactly who I am and be the African person that I am. Our West Africanness is, you know what's funny? Like, Wakanda made being African cool.
Oh, my God. It made it so cool.
And we're all like, remember when it wasn't cool?
Listen, I remember those days very clearly.
Girl.
But you know what? But there's something to that, though, where I feel like, you know, again, this is the point about bringing your whole self, you know, being unabashed about it, which is that, you know, Wakanda may have made us all want to go live there and made people who maybe didn't necessarily pay attention before, you know, want to go live in Wakanda. But honestly, I think it's the shine of everyone who's excelling and proud of their heritage that's actually making it sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I give credit to you, to Yvonne, you know, Abiola, even though Issa's not in the Voltron, you know, like all the people who are not afraid to exhibit their Africanness. David Oyelowo, I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
Lupita, you know, we could just keep naming names. Like, I do feel like there is such a strength in being able to celebrate where you're from.
Yeah.
And that's why when people are like, I want to join Voltron, I'm like, start your own damn Voltron. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, come on. Like, you know, you don't need to be part of ours. Do your own thing. You know, like celebrate whoever you are. Like do that. That's great. You know, and I really do think that with all of that excitement, you know, in this very moment, I do want to make sure it's sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, I want Layel to grow up and be proud of being half Ghanaian, you know, and that she uses that. I hope she has her own Voltron and, you know, is waving her Ghanaian flag.
We might have to create Voltron Mini.
I know, right? Voltron Junior.
Voltron Junior.
So Voltron next.
Voltron 2.0. And we'll call them useless too all day, every day.
Every day.
Yes, and you're raising this little like Afropolitan who like travels like nobody's business. She got like all this taste. What makes you proudest of Layel?
Oh, you know, Layel is such a great person.
She is.
She really is. She's a great person. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and I said, I like Layel. And they totally dismissed it. And I was like, no, don't dismiss it. Like, that's actually a point.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I love her, of course, because she's my child. And, you know, I love her. There's no question about it. But I like her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if she was not my child, I would want her to be my friend. You know, that like I really like her as a human being. And so that's probably what I'm most proud of. It has nothing to do with me. You know, it's nothing to do with anything I've done in her life, but that her spirit is such a likable one and that she's just a good person. I'm very, very proud of that.
She is. She's really good to kick it with. We'd be out here. We'd be taking layout places. We just because.
Okay, exactly. She'd be hanging.
She'd be hanging and taking all the pictures.
Now,
she's good with that. She can take a good picture.
Oh God, I gotta get control of the selfie lifestyle. I gotta help her with that.
Lord. So as you're doing all of this stuff, you know I'd be getting on you on this. Like, how are you taking care of yourself?
Of myself, yes.
Mm-hmm, girl.
Ooh, okay. So here's the real truth, right?
Yeah.
Is that I love to sleep. Mm-hmm. I really do. I know it appears as if I'm not sleeping because I'm everywhere. But you won't catch me out on these streets when I am tired. No way. I need full 8 hours. I am not one of these people who brags about sleeping for 4 hours, by the way, which is not healthy and not possible. Actually, it is possible for like 1% of human beings who have a genetic mutation. Okay.
Yeah.
The rest of us, you actually do need 7 to 8 hours a night in order to be at your full functioning best. So I am not afraid to go to an event and dip out at 11 o'clock. Because I'm like, I can testify to that.
I've seen Bose. Let me tell y'all about Bose. Bose has tried to sneak out of an event in all her glory. Like in the middle of an event. And I was like, ma'am, you're not sneaking out of here. Everybody sees you leaving. There's no way you in your tallness, in all your big hairness, in your long nailness is sneaking out. You're not sneaking out. You're a foolish person.
Sometimes I try it though. I try it because, you know, sometimes it's hard to get out of place. They won't let you leave. So I try to sneak out and they're like, we can see you.
We can see you
with your bag and your hair. It's walking out the door. And I recognize that. But, you know, but that's why I'm unashamed. Like, that's why I got to tell people up front. I'm coming into the event and I'm like, listen, I am going to leave in an hour. Okay. So let's just make sure whatever I need to be doing in here, let's just make sure I'm doing it because the clock is ticking, you know? So yeah, no, I'd like to show up places, but I don't around with that. No, I need my sleep. It's mostly about my sleep, you know, and being recharged. But mentally, it is also about, you know, all the things we've been talking about, like how do I replenish my, you know, any challenges that I have and who do I go to? Voltron is clearly a very important part of that. My sister circle is really important, a part of that. The people that I can be honest and clear with, you know, I do pray a lot, actually, you know, a little bit of meditation, a little bit of prayer to just center me. And like I was saying before, you know, being able to follow my spirit, it's not just about the job moves, you know, those major moments. It's also the daily decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some things that it's like, you know, you're in a meeting with somebody and you're just like, you get some sense or something that tells you this person isn't all that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, and, but you need to be in constant prayer and in constant meditation, at least I do, in order to be able to identify that, because I'm not trying to waste my time or make the wrong decision or the wrong step. And so I need to be able to be clear on, you know, a number of decisions that, that I need to make. And so I spend a lot of time making sure that I'm centered. And all of that is self-care for me.
Yes.
Plus, like, my food is really important. You know, I don't like no salads or sandwiches. You know, I'm truly West African. I gotta have hot food all the time.
You ate true African.
I eat well. You know, I eat really well for me, for my body.
It's Ghana jollof, but whatever.
Listen, because Ghana jollof is nutritious. And you people right. with your Nigerian jollof, there's nothing inside. What are you eating? Just rice.
Just insult us like this. Come on, show.
I need things inside of my jollof. You people, you are dry. Your food is dry.
Ah, see insult. See my life. Oh my God. Oh my God. See insult. Jesus. It's fine.
I like how we've been having this very powerful conversation. It's going to disintegrate because of jollof.
Because of jollof wars. Like, that's it's where it's like, good. Really? You're just going to insult my rice. It's fine. Next time I'm coming to LA, Mama Abba knows the only Ghana jollof I eat is Bose's mom's jollof. Listen, that's it.
But by the way, lovey, let me tell you, it's a moment of pride for her, you know. She brags about that too. I hope you know this. She uses it in her own circles.
Yes.
She's like, even me, my jollof is so sweet. Then my Nigerian children, they come and they eat it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, mommy, please don't say that. Like, don't say that.
No, that actually, that is actually a point of pride. Because I'm just stating, the only Ghana jollof I will accept, the only one, is Mama Abba, because hers is anointed.
Right.
It's special Ghana jollof. Everybody else's is, no, I don't eat it. And Bose
exactly.
is she don't eat nothing. She don't eat nothing American. The girl is a bush person. Bose, if you want to kill Bose, give her something that has cheese in it. Just kill her dead.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I can't. You know, No, I don't. Because you know what? I think people pretend as if like cheese is natural to Africans. It's not. Stop pretending. Let's all just get on it. Most of us have, you know, some sort of lactose intolerance or something. So I just want to make sure that I am being true to my heritage and my DNA composition. Okay? Thank you very much.
So looking out for...
This is a PSA.
PSA, hot food. Yeah, no, like, I actually still eat 70% African food. Like, legit.
Yeah, I mean,
that's part
on.
Of my self-care. If I go too long without rice, my rice levels drop low and things aren't right. Like, I need my rice levels to never drop low. So...
Correct.
That is definitely part of my self-care, too. So I agree with that. Not jollof, though.
You know what? You just had to have the last word. You know what? But it's your show, so I'm gonna let you live.
That's it. Don't worry. Just one time, because you've already insulted my rice. You have insulted my rice.
We're still gonna be friends, though. Okay. Insulted now.
In spite of the jollof wars, we stand side by side.
Correct.
As sisters,
I'll defend you to the end, lovey. You know.
Correct. Correct. And I'm so proud of you and of all the moves you make and how big they are and even the small ones. And I am so excited to cheer you on along all of it.
Thank you, lovey. I so appreciate you. This platform is incredible. We appreciate your voice. And, you know, I just, by the way, I love everyone who follows you and comments. I just sometimes go on your comments just to laugh and, like, take a break for the day. Because the kind of comedy that's happening there is incredible.
They're hysterical.
So thank you for everything you do.
They are hysterical. Love Nation has no chill, no sense.
I mean,
just
no chill. I love it. I love it. I love
the
it.
The best. And I love you. And yeah, we'll talk probably later today.
Yeah, exactly. I'll see you in like 5 minutes.
Bye, boo.
Okay, bye.
All that glitters is not gold. It's blood, it's tears, it's sweat. My glitter is made up of pain, sacrifice, and hard work. Y'all, that's a word. When you see people out in the world winning, you're not seeing everything that got them to that place in that time. It takes work, believing in yourself, fighting fear, having a squad that will loan you their courage. We do that for each other, and I'm so grateful to have Bose in my corner. If you want to get more inspiration and goodness from Bose, be sure to follow her on social media. She's at BadassBose on Instagram and Twitter. Definitely follow along so you can get the details on what she's doing, and you can pre-order her new book when that drops next year. You can learn directly from Bose with her Badass Workshop, and it's allowing people to really up-level their goals and their relationships and their lives. So you sign up for that at BadassWorkshop.com. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Professional Troublemaker Podcast. If you loved what you heard, make sure you subscribe to Professional Troublemaker in your podcast platform of choice and share it with people. Let them know this is dope. Also, order my namesake book, Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual, anywhere that you buy books. I especially love when you buy it from independent bookstores. So go to ProfessionalTroublemakerBook.com for more, because this book is game-changing, and I'd say that even if I wasn't the one who wrote it. And please make sure you rate this show and leave a comment with a 5-star review, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you choose to listen. Feel free to also share some insights and whatever connected with you on social media. And be sure to tag us. We are at Professional Troublemaker on Instagram. And me, I'm at Lovey everywhere. Until next time, have the courage to speak your truth and show up as yourself. Create good trouble.